You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
All right, guys, welcome to today's show. And joining me on the show today is Chris Frost. Now, guys like this and episodes like this are why I really wanted to podcast, because I just love hearing the excitement and the experiences that other people have had in the outdoors, their passion for it, and just hearing the stories. I mean, he shares a lot of really cool stories, including his first buck and his biggest buck and a really rare elk tag that he got to draw and his experience on that. And so we're going to dive into that shortly, but I've got to fill you in on a couple things. We are finishing up piecing together our Alaska hunt. Now, I know we've done a couple episodes about it, and we will do a full episode breakdown, or I guess a hunt and price and planning breakdown of our trip to Alaska. But my buddy Austin and I sat down this morning turkey hunting, and then afterwards he came over and we really tried to figure out the last few pieces of this trip. And I think we've got it all dialed in. So that will be coming soon. I'm just going to tell you, we are going to do this trip for less than half the price of what I hear a lot of other guys doing DIY elk hunts in Alaska for. So I'm pumped about that hunt. This episode got me super fired up about hunting this fall. I think you guys are going to enjoy it. So let's jump in with Chris.
Like, he was doing things that were just badass.
That was one of the coolest moments of my life.
I was really scared, but knowing that Dan had the gun, I did have the rifle, like, we would be okay.
All right, guys, welcome to today's show. And joining me on the show today is Chris Frost. Chris, thanks for hopping on, man.
Hey, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah, I can already tell. I like when I hop on a call with people and chat a little bit before I hit record, get a feel for who they are, how the conversation's going to go, and I got a feeling I'm going to be laughing and smiling quite a bit in this one.
Well, I'll do my best not to bore you or the listeners.
Yeah, I don't think this one's going to be boring at all. Before we fully dive in, why don't you share with people who you are, maybe what you do in some of your hunting history?
Yeah, absolutely. So, like you said, my name is Chris Frost. I am active duty Army, just past 18 years. Spent most of my time as a Blackhawk mechanic. Recently, I've been doing a little bit of special operations recruiting. Pretty fun job. Grew up actually in Missouri, started out around the Springfield, Buffalo area, and then moved up north of Kansas City. And then, like most people, you know, my dad, my brother, and I, you know, myself, we went out hunting and fishing and part of the Orange Army, you know, like everybody else. And then as I started getting older, got excited about archery hunting and shooting bows, and then just kind of took off from there.
Man, so you grew up in the Springfield, Buffalo area. I saw in your questionnaire that you had been in the Springfield area, but that's pretty crazy, because one of the biggest bucks that I've ever seen personally or known the person who has taken it came out of Buffalo, and it was like a triple main beam buck that now I guess it's my buddy's ex stepdad shot on his property up in Buffalo.
Yeah, no, I was there, you know, when I was like real young. I want to say like 3 or 4 years old, and then we moved up north. Kansas City. So my father's stepdad had a little cabin in some woods down there around the Buffalo area. So I remember going down there a couple times as a kid and fishing in his pond and stuff. But other than that, pretty much spent most of my time just north of the Kansas City area.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. I always hesitate telling people about how big the bucks are down here. I'm like, at this point, the cat's out of the bag. I've talked about it enough, but luckily we haven't seen an influx of non-resident hunters coming to my area, and hopefully we can keep it that way.
Now, Missouri does a pretty good job of making those tags a little expensive to kind of ward off some people. And that's one thing I've missed about living in Missouri because, you get your archery tags and it's like $25 and you get two deer and two turkey and everything else. But if you, now that I don't live there anymore, if I want to come back and hunt with my dad and my brother, I'm looking at, like $300 to $500. And I'm like, I enjoy hunting, but I don't know if a deer's worth that much.
For real, I've invited several friends from out of state to come and turkey hunt, and they're like, "How much is the non-resident tag?" And I remember the first time I looked it up for somebody, I was like, "Holy cow! Never mind, we could probably both go to a different state and hunt turkey together for the same price."
Yeah.
So
But I
when
mean, Missouri does have a lot of, really good hunting opportunities. So, the people that are willing to put in the time and effort and money and energy, then it, can tend to pay off pretty well.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's such an interesting place. Like there are pockets of really, really good hunting for just about anything you want. And then there's some just dried up holes where you're probably not going to see a 2.5, 3.5 year old deer, or if you do, everyone's going to know about it. There's pockets. I've got buddies who are like, "Dude, the turkey have just dried up on my property. It's terrible. We never see any mature birds anymore. We hardly see any, period." And then there's other pockets where I drive by the same field every day on the way to my property, and there's 40 birds out in this field. And I mean, I feel like you get that no matter where you are, but I was not expecting the level of, I guess, the amount of game and the amount of hunting and fishing opportunities when I first moved down here.
Yeah, no, I mean, I absolutely love it because, where I grew up, there's, you got giant lakes. We're not that far from the Missouri River, and then we used to, with a bunch of our family friends, we'd go to deer camp down around the Stockton area. We had a real nice couple down there that had 80 to 100 acres. I don't remember exactly how much, but you'd get, three different families involving four to five different people in one little single wide trailer for a deer camp. And, we're sleeping on top of each other and everybody's going out in the woods. And, back then you had to draw for doe tags. So, everybody's looking for that one buck. And if you're lucky enough to get a doe tag and you see one and it's, 700 yards away and, you got a single shot, break action 12 gauge with a slug in it, and you just get to sit and watch the one deer go by. And so we did that for a few years, and then started moving up around the the home area and got a little piece of small property and hunted that for years. It wasn't the lack of animals that stopped us from getting anything. It was the lack of ability, I should say.
Yeah.
We
Yeah. I feel like you can go with a lot of animals, and if you don't know how to hunt, you don't know how to hunt. Like, it's not going to help you any. And then vice versa, I know guys who are just absolute killers, and you could put them in a spot with the lowest success rate out of any county around, and they'll still find a way to get it done.
Yeah, I'm not one of those guys.
Well, based on your questionnaire, you said that you killed your biggest buck to date, and I'm excited to dive into that story. So,
Yeah,
odds
that
are it's bigger than everything I have.
and funny enough, it's bigger than everything I have too, because to this day I have four antlered whitetail bucks that I've ever actually successfully harvested in my life. I got a couple heartbreaker stories which we can get into later if you want to hear me cry. But that one, that's definitely a really special one to me, because everybody that hunts, they dream of getting that great big monster buck and, being able to show it off and, you know, the sense of pride and accomplishment from, you know, completing that task. Because, I mean, that's really what it is. Is, you know, yes, you're enjoying it. You do it because you love it. But there's a purpose and a goal at the end of it.
Yep.
You know, and so that one, it was kind of funny the way it worked out, because that was the hunting season of 21. And I probably hunted harder that season than I have maybe ever hunted in my life, except for the 22 season. And that's another fun one we can get into. But that season, I was all about archery. Like, I don't even own a rifle. I don't even own a rifle. Well, that's a lie. I have a 22 rifle, but I don't have a deer rifle.
Yeah.
And so it was bow hunting. And I started, you know, just like everybody else in June, July, scouting, putting up cameras, you know, and getting in the stand every day possible. You know, even at the beginning of the season when it's still 85, 90 degrees, which I just despise.
But dude, I'm happy that is to be the worst.
It I is. Hate it's terrible.
That oh, that I late summer hunt is absolutely brutal. And every time I go out, I'm like, why am I out here?
Yeah. I mean, it's gotten to the point where I almost don't even hunt the first few weeks. I wait until it like starts at least attempting to cool down, because there is nothing fun about sitting out there and the bugs and the heat and sweating. Like, it's not enjoyable.
No, but you put me in a stand on an overcast, breezy day at that time of year, I'll be okay. But I found myself bringing an extra jacket and putting it in the branch above my head just to get some relief from the sun. And
yeah,
I never kill that early in the season anyway. It's more of observation sits. And I'm like, I could do that from my AC truck on a hillside nearby.
Yeah, I'm definitely sitting in the stand more so just to watch what's going on. Obviously, if the, you know, if the option presents itself, then I would take it. But more than anything, yeah, it's just observation at that point, just to see what's going on. But yeah. No, that, like I said, that season I hunted, man, I bet I probably sat in the stand probably 65 to 70 days out of the season. Like, every opportunity I got, I was in there, you know, morning, night, because like my job, I'm pretty flexible in it right now, you know, like I don't have to be to work till, you know, 9 o'clock in the morning ish. And so I'll go hit the stand and I'll hunt for an hour, hour and a half, and then I'll still get to work on time.
Nice.
You know, and I'm fortunate enough to work in an office where everybody else likes to hunt too. So if I was to get something, I just, you know, give them a call and say, hey, I got one. And they're going to say, do you need help? Or we'll see you when you get here. So, you know, it's not like I was really going to get in trouble or anything. And then I would keep my stuff in my truck, and as soon as it was over, I'd go back to the woods, you know. And most of my hunting up until the last few years, I've been in situations where it's like, if you don't shoot it when it shows up, you're probably not going to see anything again, maybe the whole season, you know. So I was finally in a position where I'm hunting in Kansas, and people know that Kansas is a, you know, it's a big buck area. And you know, so I had my cameras out and I was getting pictures of, you know, anywhere from your little scrub, you know, 2 points all the way up to, I had 6 or 7 deer on camera that year that were breaking 170 easy.
Holy cow.
And so the thing is where I was hunting though, it's, you know, it closes down certain areas because of, you know, different reasons. And so I couldn't hunt in the areas where my cameras were because they were closed. So I was having to go to other places and hunt. And, you know, I'm sitting in the stand and I'm having, you know, really, really nice bucks. Like, they're, you know, great potential bucks, but they're, you know, 120, 130 inch bucks, you know, all around me at 5, 6, 7, 30, 40 yards. And I'm just watching them. And it was the hardest thing I've probably ever done, was stopping myself from shooting them, because I've just never had the ability to pass deer like that before. And, you know, I know I'll probably catch some grief from that, because everybody's like, well, you always have the option. Well, you know, you go 10 years of tag soup and you start getting real salty about hunting.
Yeah.
So, you know, we had a weekend where it was, a gun season pop up, and me and one of the guys I work with, we went out to an area, and, you know, something I'd learned how to do that year was glassing. And I know that sounds weird learning how to do it, but you know, in the majority of places you hunt in Missouri, there's no glassing. You're in woods or, you know, prairies or whatever. So glassing is not something you really think of in the Midwest as it is, like, opposed to, you know, Western hunting.
Yeah.
But in Kansas, there's a lot of really big open areas. So you get up on a hilltop and you can glass the same way you can in the mountains. And, you know, just like the mountains, you'll be sitting there glassing and all of a sudden, poof, there's an animal. And you're like, where did that thing even come from? You know, so
I feel like everybody needs to experience that at some point where you look at a wide open spot and you think there is nothing out here. I could see it with my naked eye. And then all of a sudden something huge jumps up. In fact, I saw a video today and it was about coos deer. And it's like everybody wonders why they call them the gray ghosts. And it was, I think it was on Killshot Central, their Instagram page. And it was a buck standing up on this rock ledge. And they're like, keep watching. He pulls the trigger and you just see like a dozen deer that were in frame the whole time just scatter. And I looked back and I tried to find him. And I found like two of the does out of the dozen that were in the video. But yeah, glassing is definitely an art form. And for people who don't understand what we're talking about, go out, even if you're not hunting, go out west somewhere and try to pick apart any big hillside or any plains, meadows, prairies, whatever, and see. There's animals out there, I guarantee. See if you can find one.
Yeah, I mean, that was the most amazing thing to me, because we would all meet up, you know, on a hilltop at, you know, probably 15, 20 minutes before daybreak. And, you know, we all got different setups. You know, one guy's got some 15 by 56s. I got a really nice set of Vortex 10 by 42s, which I'm absolutely amazed and impressed with, because, again, I don't own expensive stuff. And I realize that those aren't the most expensive, but they're the best ones I've ever owned.
Yeah.
You know, and then we got a guy with a spotting scope, and we'll all just sit there next to each other and just start glassing areas. And then, you know, if somebody finds something, then we start calling it out, whatever. You know, and it's amazing to watch, you know, the size of these animals and how they just materialize out of the grass. And you're like, how the hell did that thing just show up like that? You know?
Yeah. So in Kansas, where you're glassing, is it a lot of prairie, or are you also glassing like ag field and stuff?
Well, where specifically I go is mostly just prairie.
Okay.
Prairie and woods mix, but not, you know, there might be some small ag fields, like, and I mean, that's usually when you're hitting like that 1500 plus yards away kind of a thing. Most of the time it's just prairie, and it just amazes me how you can just, you know, like I said, sit there and watch it. And all of a sudden, you know, like, poof, there's five deer and you're like, where did they come from? You know? So me and my buddy, we went out, we were glassing, and it was an amazing morning. We glassed probably, I don't know, 15, 20 deer, you know, and 75% of them were bucks, ranging anywhere from, you know, small little six pointers up to the one that I chased. And that one, it was kind of like, you know, the ultimate trophy of that prairie, because five different people went after that same deer that year. I went after it on two different stocks. Now, granted, I had a rifle and it was my buddy's rifle. And I am a terrible shot with a rifle. Terrible. I have never been good with one. I don't know why. Hunting rifle, I should say. I've never been good with one. I don't know if it's just because I don't have enough time behind one. I am a huge, huge buck fever person. I mean, it gets so bad that, you know, like I fall apart, you know, trying to stand there, and I can't calm my breathing. I'm freaking out, you know, whatever. 9 times out of 10, I don't end up shooting because I'm afraid of, you know, wounding the deer versus just missing it completely.
Yeah.
You know, so like we went out with his, and I made a couple of stalks on this deer, and, you know, we glassed it about 1100 yards out, and, you know, then started making a move on it. And it's funny because, you know, like you've said several times on, you know, other podcasts, how, you know, you look at the area that you're, you know, watching through the binos, and it's like, oh, that doesn't look bad. And then you start walking towards that area, and all of a sudden you realize there's 17 different ditches and cliffs and, you know, trees and, you know, rises and falls. And you're like, what the heck? That was flat when I was up there looking at it. You know, so that 1,100 yard trek through the prairie just turned into almost an hour long movement.
Yeah.
When I
Yeah,
get up there, I'm like,
it's crazy how in I mean in the once you're actually boots on the ground on the bottom like that, walking through it, you do realize at that point how animals can pop up seemingly out of nowhere.
But you know, made a couple stalks on that deer, just wasn't able to do anything with it. Season passed and we waited till the next gun season. I bow hunted in between, didn't have any luck. But the next gun season came up and we're like, hey, we're gonna go do the same thing again. The thing was is that this gun season was now open to everybody versus only certain individuals the first go around. So
Dang.
now you've got the Orange Army in the AO. And I mean, they're road hunting, they're driving their trucks right through the middle of the field. They have just no regards for anybody else. You know, hunter etiquette is something that you find in a book buried in the dirt. Like they don't care. They're out there for themselves. And so one of his buddies was hunting on a different area and called him up. It's like, hey man, I just got me a nice deer. You know, do you think you could come help me? And so my buddy was like, hey, I'm gonna go help him. And I'm like, well, if you need a hand, I'll go with you. He's like, yeah, whatever. So we get over there, help his buddy shot a beautiful like 160 inch buck with a really cool extra couple of points on it. And then in the area, you know, we all got to talking. My buddy had already killed one of his deer. This dude now shot his, and then he looks at me and he goes, hey man, I'm done hunting this area. You know, I got cameras here, here, and here, and a couple stands here, and this is your area until season's over, until you tag out. And I was like, wow, dude, like, thanks. I didn't even ask, but I appreciate that.
Yeah.
And it was funny the first time I went to go hunt that spot. Obviously, walking in the dark, I could not find his stand. And I'm out there with like, you know, I didn't want to use a white flashlight, but I got like this cool little like green flashlight, and I'm looking around and I'm like trying to find it. And the whole time it's like above me, but I just couldn't see it. And so I'm like texting them. It's like 5:35, 6 o'clock in the morning, and I'm like, dude, where's your stand? And he's like, I like drop me a pin, and I am like, you know, I send him the pin. He's like, you're standing under my stand. You set my camera off. And I was like, oh. So I get up in his stand, and like the first day, it was, man, it was brutally cold. It was like, I want to say like 4 or 5 degrees with like, you know, the 8 to 10 mile an hour wind. And I was dead frozen in the first 30 minutes sitting in that tree.
Yep.
And I saw like one doe that morning, you know, no big deal. Got down on the stand. And a couple days later, I was going to go hunt it. Ended up having some stuff come up and I couldn't go out. And dude sent me a picture. He's like, look what just walked in front of the stand. And I was like, I turned the phone to my wife and I was like, do you see what you made me miss? And she was like, you'll get over it. And I was like, well, I'm going out tomorrow morning, no matter what. She was like, fine, you do. So the next morning I go out and I'm sitting in the stand and it's a beautiful morning. I mean, you know, you think of those picture perfect hunting mornings. That was it. It's nice and cold, you know, little to no wind, you know, like sometimes cloud cover is a good thing, sometimes it's not. I don't know, but it was a perfect morning in the woods. The deer were alive instantly. I watched a really good like 10 pointer chase a couple of does well out of range. And then I'm sitting there looking around and all of a sudden, like, I don't know how I missed it, but poof, right in front of me at like 22 yards was, you know, a doe and her fawn. And I was like, holy crap, they're looking right at me. And I was like, you know, not moving, freaking out. They start walking away and I'm like, okay. And then I look to my left, there's that same deer that was on camera the night before. And
Oh man.
he's coming in on a string. This deer was probably, I would range it between 175 and 185 inches. Just
Oh
a
my
monster.
gosh.
Like I could send you a picture of it. And he's coming in hot and he's gonna hit the open window I got at 24 yards. He's coming
Oh
in,
my
I grab
gosh.
my bow, I stand up, I go to full draw, and he stops behind three trees. And the way he stopped, I did not have a shot at him in any way. And so I'm standing there locked out, holding. And all of a sudden he kind of like jumps and turns and like bolts, but then only bolts for like maybe 20 feet and then just steadily walks off.
Oh
And I was
man.
like, you've got to be kidding me. And the best part was, and I say the best part sarcastically, because he stopped right in front of the damn camera. So the picture
Oh.
went to the dude's you know, phone. And then he texted me and he was like, dude, did you see that? And I was like, yeah, I was at full draw. And he ran away. And he's like, man. And so I'm sitting there. I'm not going to lie. I'm a little booty butt salty about it. And I'm kind of like, you know, pouting. And I look back over my shoulder and I see a deer down in the woods. So I didn't even like wait to see what it was. I just immediately stood up, grabbed my bow, turned around and got ready. And all of a sudden, this deer walks out and then another deer behind it and then another deer behind it and then another deer behind it. And all four of them were bucks. And it was really weird because the first one was a little like spike with his left side broken off. The second one was a little spike with his right side broken off. The third one was a little basket, like 7 or 8 point. And then the one behind it was the one I was going to shoot.
Yeah.
And I could tell the way they were walking, they were going to come right underneath my stand. And so I just sit there and I lock out and I'm waiting. First deer goes right underneath me, never pays attention to me. Second deer, same thing, right underneath me, doesn't even care. The little basket comes underneath me and starts nibbling on a tree underneath me and then looks up at me and makes direct eye contact. And I mean, I'm freaking out because I'm expecting that deer to just explode and blow everything out of there.
Yep.
I'm not moving. I'm watching and it decides it's done with the tree and it starts walking off. And now the big one's right underneath me, does the exact same thing, stops and starts nibbling on that tree, looks directly up at me.
Oh, and my gosh.
I'm like, I'm starting to get dizzy from the blood loss in my head because of how hard my heart is pounding. I'm expecting this deer to hear my heart and run away. And he goes right back down to the ground, turns his head away from me, underneath me. And I actually went to start pulling and some, I don't know what, but something was like, don't, just wait.
Yeah.
And so I waited a second and he stepped about 2 or 3 steps out right underneath me at 6-7 yards, quartered away. And I drew back. And when I did, when I locked out and anchored, he like kind of flinched a little bit. And then I kind of don't remember what happened next because I literally cannot relive it, but I know that I put my, you know, pin on him. Not that I really had to, cause he was literally 7 yards away. And I let the arrow go and I don't remember aiming. I don't remember pulling the trigger on my release, but I remember seeing that arrow disappear through its back. And that deer immediately did a 180 and ran, you know, backwards through the woods. And I watched him and he went like 40, 50 yards and then crashed.
Oh my gosh. And
I lost it. Like uncontrollable, ugly crying, shaking. Like,
dude, it's right the now, best, like, man. It's, you know, the greatest feeling ever.
And, you know, I almost fell out of the damn tree stand. I was shaking so bad. And, I got on the phone. I immediately called my wife and she knows that if I call her that early in the morning when I'm out hunting, I finally got something.
Yeah.
And so I'm like bawling, trying to talk to her the whole time. I start sending out text messages. I'm getting phone calls and I'm getting text messages and everybody's like, yeah, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, the guy who let me hunt out of his stand, he calls me and he was like, hey, man, let me see it. What did you get? Like, do I have it on camera? Blah, blah, blah. And I was like, dude, I'm still in my stand. He's like, well, get down and go look at it. And I was like, I can't feel my legs. I have to wait. And so, you know, finally I'm able to, you know, compose myself enough to climb down out of the tree. And I hit the ground. And like I said, I saw him fall, but I still wanted to do my due diligence and follow the trail because I don't remember shooting the thing, but I remember it falling. And so I start following the trail and, you know, I see some blood and then I see my arrow. And it's in two pieces and it's still missing, you know, the bottom part with the broadhead on it.
Dang.
And I kind of started freaking out because earlier in life I have a bad history and I'm not proud of this. And it's not that I take terrible shots, but I've had a bad history of, you know, shooting deer and not being able to find them. And, you know, no matter how many, you know, options I exhausted, you know, dogs, yeah, trackers, you know, everything. And So I started immediately panicking and I was like, no, I saw him go down. And so I kept following the trail. And then, you know, it's like more blood, and then just like a massacre. And I'm like, okay, this deer is dead, but where is it at? I can't find it. Yeah. And I'm like, I'm freaking out. And I turn around and I look and I see one little tine sticking up out of a ditch. He found the only ditch in the flipping area to fall down into and crash into.
Oh, man. And
I walked up to him, you know, the crying started again because, you know, like it worked, like it happened and now he's mine.
Yeah.
And, you know, putting my hands on him and just trying to, you know, fully take in the, you know, the whole entire season and, you know, just how it happens so fast like that, you know. And like I said, to this date, he is my largest deer ever. And I got him mounted on my wall. I don't know if you got the pictures that I sent you or not.
I did,
but he's the one on the right.
Okay.
I went and got him measured, after, so I immediately called a taxidermist. I was like, this dude's going on my wall no matter what. This is my first giant buck with the bow. And, so, you know, hit the drying period. But prior to that, I don't know if you know how, Buckmasters works. But you can get your deer scored by Buckmasters and there's no drying period and they don't do like all the, deductions and all that stuff. They measure every single inch of bone and that's what it goes down as, you know, so they have, but they don't take the inside spread. They don't add that in.
Yeah. I wish they would add the inside spread, but I love the idea of not doing deductions, of not doing the drying period, like just let the deer be the deer.
Yeah. So they'll give you the inside spread, but that's not what it goes in the record book says. Right. So it's called a BTR score when they do the full thing. So I, you know, looked up, you know, where I could find a score and the closest one was practically the Nebraska border, but I was like, I don't care. I'm driving up there. So I drove up there and got him scored and he measured out at, like 172 and an eighth or 172 and 3/8, BTR, but he actually went in the Buckmaster's record book as like a 154 and some change. And at the time in the category, because like they break it all up in categories in the Buckmaster record book at the time, he was the number 39th ranked buck in the world for that category.
Jeez.
And I was, you know, like, I mean, this thing is just, he's ridiculous, you know? And then I took him to, a trade show in, Overland Park, Kansas, to an outdoor show. And they had, Pope and Young scorers there. So they scored him as a 161 and some change non-typical. So that's what he's going to go in the Pope and Young book as, you know, and his bases are like 6.5 inches around.
You know, he's got like gigantic, man.
Yeah. And the one of the brow tine on his, what is it? Left antler. Yeah. His left antler is broke off, but the right antler, the brow tine, if you look at it the right way, I don't know how well you can see it in that picture. I can send you a better one. It actually looks like the tip of a Bowie knife. Like you know, we called him Blade just because of that. It was so crazy looking.
Dude, I love those unique features on animals. And it's like it's not exclusive to bucks, but honestly, any antlered animal, you can find these really cool things. I've got an elk up on the wall at my buddy's shop, and it's got like a mallard curl on the back of the base. And I'm like, out of everything on this bull, that's my favorite feature. For whatever reason, I'm like, it's just a really cool, unique growth that you just don't see. And it's not huge. It's not like a drop tine. It's just this tiny little maybe 1.5-2 inch curl. And for whatever reason, those things, the blading, when they're all palmed out, like those unique characteristics, I think make a buck so much cooler. All right. How many of you guys hate dealing with tangled up rope, trying to untie it? It's all knotted up and you actually really need it at the time. Don't raise your hands because I obviously can't see you, but those days are long gone. Rapid Rope is a quick deploy rope solution that you can pull the length you need and cut it all with one hand. You don't need knives or scissors or a lighter to singe the end because It's cross-threaded to keep it from fraying. Yeah, they've thought of everything. And this is way stronger than your average 550 cord. In fact, this is 1,100-pound test. It comes in a shatterproof canister that you can fit in the cup holder in your vehicle, or your backpack, or, I don't know, if you still wear cargo pants, any one of the 1,000 pockets that you have. It comes in a 120-foot canister, a 70-foot canister, and you can get a rope refill. So, just in a matter of seconds, you could be deploying and cutting rope with one hand again. So if you want to stop dealing with the headache of untying rope and detangling everything anytime you need to tie something down, go check out rapidrope.com and use code NOMADIC for 10% off at checkout. If you're an avid listener of this podcast, you've probably heard me talking about Infinite Outdoors in the past. Infinite Outdoors is expanding access for hunting and fishing on private land across the country. From whitetail hunts in Missouri to waterfowl hunts in Wyoming and pheasant hunts in Colorado, they provide access to over 1 million acres of private land listings for all types of hunting and fishing. Best part is, it's incredibly easy to browse and book properties all on the Infinite Outdoors app. The app is free to download and easy to use. All you have to do is sign up and you can browse over 250 different adventures across 10 states. Download the app today and use NOMADIC15 for 15% off your membership.
Yeah, no, the other buck that's in that picture, I shot that with a rifle in North Central Missouri when I was like 22, 23 years old. And that was that's a really, really quick story. Like everything about that hunt was wrong. I didn't, again, have a rifle. I was borrowing the landowner's rifle. We woke up late. We got out to the area. The only thing that's right about this story was A, the hunting property, and B, the deer. But we got out there late. Like, it was already daylight by the time we finally got out to the woods. It was like 6:30, 6:35, whatever. And we're hunting in, you know, had a friend that had an 18-acre pecan orchard. And in front of it was a levee. And on the other side of the levee was a bunch of timber and then the Missouri River. And then it was completely surrounded by corn and soybean fields. So, like, you could not ask for an absolute better place to hunt.
Yeah.
And so we get up there. My brother's on one side of the property. I'm on the other. He's watching everything that way. I'm watching everything this way. I literally had gotten sitting up in a, you know, in a lawn chair, sitting on the ground, you know, orange army time. And I catch this deer like 500 yards out. All I can see is movement. It's a little bit foggy, but not bad. And where I was hunting, you know, had rack restrictions. So you had to make sure it had 4 points on one side. And, but it's 500 yards out. I'm hunting, you know, with an old 270 with a, you know, a Tasco 3x9 on it or whatever, you know, and I'm like struggling to see what it is. And it starts running at the bottom of the levee. It just starts just hauling right towards me. And I was like, okay, I start getting excited. And, you know, all of a sudden it turns, and I want to say it's probably close to like 175, 200 yards out. It turns and goes straight up on top of the levee and stop. And I was like, if I don't shoot right now, I'm never going to see that deer again.
Yeah.
And again, shooting somebody's rifle, I've never touched before. I've never put a round through it. But, you know, when an old farmer tells you that 270 is true, you believe him. Right.
Yep.
So yeah, I put it on him. I pulled the trigger and he just stood there. And I was like, uh-oh. So again, re-racked real quick, put it on him, and boom, he just dropped. I mean, just solid dropped. And I was like, now the adrenaline's hitting me and I'm freaking out. And again, like I said earlier, I have a habit, you know, a bad history of deer running away. So I reload around and I walk 200 yards across the field with, you know, the gun at the ready. Cause if this thing even like had a death twitch, it was getting another round. And the closer I got, the bigger his antlers got. You know, I made sure that he was at least 4 points before I shot him. I want to make sure I make that clear so I don't get drugged through the, you know, the comments later. Yeah. I knew he was 4 points or bigger. I just didn't know how big he really was. And the closer I got, the bigger he got, the more I started shaking. I was like, okay, stop. He's not moving. You know, unloaded the gun, made sure I was safe and clear. And I get up on top of the levee and I just start counting points. And I'm losing count because there's so many of them. And I'm like, at the time, this was my very, very first buck ever. And I'm freaking out. Because, like, you know, he was, I got to like 15 or 16 points. I called my brother on the radio and I'm like, dude, I got him. Like, he's down. He's like, what is it? I was like, he's a big buck. He's like, how many points? I was like, I don't know, 15 or 20. And he was like, yeah, whatever, blah, blah. And I'm like, no, seriously, I need you to come help me drag this thing off the hill. Like, he's huge. And so my brother runs over there and he was like, dude, you weren't kidding. And I was like, yeah, I know. Like, help me get him into the truck and then I'll, you know, go away from you and you can keep hunting. Cause like I said, we'd been there for like 5-10 minutes.
Yeah.
So we get him in the truck, take him up to, you know, an area. My brother goes back to hunting. You know, I take care of the deer. And then we're hunting in a really, really small area where everybody knows everybody. So I was borrowing the landowner's truck. So everybody saw the truck thinking it was him, but then sees me driving it and sees this deer hanging out of it. And, you know, so it was, you know, like you were, how you say on a lot of your podcasts that you wish that, you know, the deer check-in stations was a thing again.
Yeah.
Because that's exactly the way this was. You had a deer check-in station, right? And you're in small town USA. So when I pull up and they see that, I got people like jumping over truck beds to try to get in the bed of my truck and look at this deer. Because he ended up having 22 points total. And 20 of them were scoreable, but he was a mainframe 9 point. And he's just got a bunch of little sticker trash at the base of each antler. And, you know, he's got, you know, some palmation on one side. He's got like a couple of knuckles on the other. Like he was a super interesting deer, you know, and to be my first one, you know, most of the time it's, you know, your 8-9 year olds that shoot deer like that. And then it's like, well, you're kind of ruined for life because most people have to hunt for years for that.
Yeah.
And, you know, so those are my two big ones, ever. So,
dude,
you know, I always said once I got my gun deer, you know, I'll get my big bow deer. And those are the only two I'm going to get mounted unless I magically find a way to shoot something bigger than both of those.
Dude, I mean, they are both absolute studs. When you said, you know, the one on the right is the bigger one, I'm like, okay, you know, I can see the mass and stuff. But then as you were telling that story, I started zooming in and looking, and I'm like, dude, I can't tell from the picture how many points this thing has. But you're right. It's just like claws coming off the base. And there's something about unique deers. Obviously, everyone's like, man, I want to shoot a giant, like mainframe 12 point, just a lot of mass, width, height, all of it. But those unique bucks, there's just something. There's something really cool about them. I do have to ask you though. So you mentioned that story and then you just told the other story about your biggest buck. It sounded like you were pretty composed with the bow. Are you like, when you get buck fever, does it seem to just kick in more with a rifle, or is the buck fever really secondary after you pull the trigger or hit the release?
So I've tried to figure this out, to be honest with you, because like I don't exactly know the reason. And the only thing I can kind of attest to it is that I started shooting a bow when I was like 15 years old. You know, traded my next door neighbor for a whole bunch of stuff. And one of the things he had was a compound bow, a little youth bear bow, and it didn't even have a string on it. You know, it had like the cable runners and everything, but not the actual string itself. So I lived, just down the hill from an archery shop. Dude had an indoor range on in his backyard, you know, shot leagues there and everything. So I take the bow up there and I'm like, hey, I want to get a string for this. And he goes, you know, I could put a string on it for you, but you know, it's not the right size. And so some old guy was in there listening and he was like, hey, I got this old bow, you know, you know, I'll sell it to you for like $50. And it was an old Indian XI. It had a wooden stock on it. It had like fiberglass limbs on it. The thing made more noise than my knees do when I stand up now every time I pulled it back. And, you know, I shot that thing for, I don't know, probably a good 6 months to a year. And, you know, one of the things that I never thought I would do was actually outshoot my equipment, because it's almost impossible to do that. Like, you're never going to be better.
For sure.
But in this case, I actually was. I picked up a bow and it was, I'm not going to act like I'm some, you know, Jesse Broadwater or anything, but like I'm really good with the bow. I was naturally, you know, like drawn to it. I picked it up. I learned the techniques. I had an amazing teacher. The guy that taught me pretty much everything I know, he was the one that owned the archery shop, and he has so many records for shooting compound bows, but he shoots with, you know, no sights, no nothing, finger release. And I mean, this dude can just, you know, drill bullseyes all day long with his eyes closed, and he's out shooting people that are sitting over there with the, you know, the $6,000 setups. Yeah. You know, so like, I learned the basics of it, and then I just, since I lived at the bottom of the hill, I would literally just walk up the hill almost every single day and shoot my bow. And, you know, so I got so good at it that it's just, you know, that muscle memory that, you know, you've talked about before, when you just, you know exactly what you need to do without thinking about it.
Yeah.
Right. So when I pull that bow back, I know how my, you know, my anchor needs to be. I know where my hand needs to be, you know, everything. You know, so it's like when I locked in on that deer, I immediately, you know, took my eyes off of its antlers.
Yep.
Because looking at the antlers is what excites me, which I would expect it to be for anybody, you know, but when I'm looking at the antlers, I get nervous. But this one, I knew as soon as I saw him, instantly, I was like, that's the one I'm shooting. So now I'm just focusing on the shot. So when he gave me the opportunity and I drew back and locked in, you know, muscle memory took over, you know, and I mean, it was a beautiful shot. It went down, you know, through the top of his, you know, the left side of his back, and exited his, you know, right in front of his right shoulder. And yeah. I mean, I hit both lungs and clipped the heart, and that's why he only went like 40 yards.
But, yeah.
You know, with a gun, it's just like you have so much time. You know, I've never taken a shot at a deer over 25 yards.
Dang.
Ever. Even though I bought a new bow, you know, 2 years ago, because the bow I had, again, I got to the point where I was getting a lot more confident in my shooting, thanks to the guys I worked with, because they challenged me. We'd go out to the archery range, like during lunch or before work, and we would just set up, you know, we would almost play like horse, but with shooting bows. And so somebody would just randomly pick some crazy off the wall shot. I'm talking like, you know, unknown distance, kneeling on top of a picnic table and, you know, aiming for the red ring. And now
yeah.
that person shoots and you got to follow suit. So I start doing that, but I'm only shooting like a 3-pin, and we're out there, you know, my pins are out to like 40 yards, but we're out there shooting 60 and 70 yards. And I'm like, dude, I can't do this with this bow. So I bought a new one, and I'm, you know, I got to the point where I'm like, you know, driving nails at 60 yards without even thinking about it. And nice. Then I take a 7-yard shot at deer, you know?
Yeah. No, that makes so sense. I mean, I feel like
that I have versus I don't have as much time, you know, behind a rifle as I do a bow. And I think that's probably, you know, that, and, you know, it's just like, you know, it's like you and I don't know, hundreds of your guests have said, you know, that excitement of, you know, hunting, and just, if you lose that excitement, then you're never going in the woods again. And I'm, you know, 42 years old. I've been hunting since I was, you know, 13. And, you know, like I said, I mean, I only shot that deer a couple years ago and I bawled like a baby. I'm not afraid to admit it.
No, I mean, there's that accomplishment, the years of not only the hunts and the time spent in the stand or in the woods, but it's like all of the preparation, all of the knowledge led you to a moment that you had probably up until that point only dreamed of. And it all comes together. The buck fever thing, man, it's so interesting. And I'm sure somebody at this point has done a study on it, but I'm really intrigued by the idea of it, right? Like, you're out there, you know why you're out there. Obviously, it's a high pressure situation. It's literally life and death for an animal. And you don't want to make a bad shot. But I find myself, like, I've always gotten buck fever after I shoot. And I've never, like, even with elk, even with, like, hunts that I didn't think I would go on growing up that I've now been on, I just don't really get buck fever. But the craziest thing happened to me, and it's probably been around a month ago now, and I don't think I've talked about it on the podcast, but I bought a thermal scope. They opened up a thermal season here in Missouri for coyotes, and I bought a thermal scope. I take it out. I had seen a bunch of animals. My good buddy of mine came up. He shot at one, smoked it, it dumped the coyote, and then I went to look to see where it was in the field, and it was back on its feet running away. And I'm like, dang, man, what the heck? And so we end up, we watch it run across the field, it goes up into the woods, and we never found it. Well, a couple nights later, I went out with some other buddies. I was showing them thermal. We get to a spot where we were right across the road from my buddy's house. He lives on 40 acres. There's 30 acres that's also part of the property, but the road divides the two. We get out into the 30 acres. I look over, and there's two coyotes. They come running, or we set up the call. They come running over, and one of them is at like 95 yards. I know my rifle's on. I've sighted it in. I've done everything I needed to with the thermal. I settle in behind it. And when I say my knees started shaking, it is like nothing I'd ever experienced before. I mean, they were violently wobbling. And I'm like, what is happening? I backed off and I was like, dude, I gotta chill out. And my buddies are like, what? I'm like, dude, I am shaking. Like, I can't settle on this coyote. And they're like, really? And I'm like, yeah. And I get on the rifle again, and it happens again. And then finally, I'm like, all right, breathe, calm down, pull the trigger. Everything's good. I settle in, pull the trigger, think I'm going to see this coyote just dump, and it just sprints away through the thermal like nothing ever happened. And, dude, they all, I mean, this just happened recently, and they all give me such a hard time about it.
Yeah, you're not living that one down.
I'm like, dude, listen, if it was any of you, I'd do the same thing. And they're like, oh, the nomadic outdoorsman got buck fever over a coyote. And I'm like, I still can't explain what happened. I've killed a lot of coyotes. Never in my life had that happen. And for some reason that night, dude, it got me. And now I'm kind of nervous. I'm like, I hope that's not my life moving forward as far as getting buck fever or getting the shakes when it's time to shoot something.
You know, I mean, it could have been the excitement of a new way of hunting too, because yeah, like, just got the thermal and now you're viewing it in a whole different view. You know, think of the first time you ever like looked at an animal through like binos. It was probably the same as most people, where they get those little, you know, $20 Tasco things from Walmart and you can see like 20 yards away and that's about it. And yep, then, you know, you start progressing up and now all of a sudden you went from, you know, nailing coyotes constantly, you know, all day, every day, no big deal. But now you're in the dark, you're watching them through a thermal, you can see, you know, their heat radiation, like it's just a new form of it. You know, it could be the excitement of that or, you know, whatever. But the good thing is that you're still getting it. You know, because it's like I love watching hunting shows, but at the same time, I hate watching hunting shows, you know, because like I just like everybody, I learn a lot from them. You know, I take everything with a grain of salt because obviously people are paid to say certain things. But, you know, when you see a person sitting in a tree stand and they've killed their, you know, 78th 160 inch deer and they're like, wow, I'm so excited, man. That's so fun. And I'm like, really? Dude, I've seen people get more excited over, you know, winning a scratchers ticket for $25.
Really? You know,
like you're shooting the same dream deer every episode. And I mean, I get it. You know, I'm not saying that they're not putting in the work, but it's just like you do it so much to the point that you're, you know, basically numb. Yeah. Versus like the Luke Bryan video that everybody makes fun of because he's
that's
like,
the greatest video. I love that. I'm like, wish everybody experienced that.
Yeah, that was me when I shot my deer. Like, just ugly, crying, shaking, freaking out. I could barely dial my phone. You know? You know, if it's these situations like that are the whole reason that I enjoy going out in the woods.
Yeah, you know? It's funny because, like, people look at that and they're like, oh, man, look at this guy cheering and crying. And, I mean, the anti-hunters, right? They're going to say all of these things. And it's like, you don't understand. I mean, this is like winning a gold medal for us.
Yeah.
Like it's your life's work. You've been putting in so many times or so much time and so much energy and training and scouting and dialing in your equipment, figuring out, like watching gear reviews, trying to find out what do I need to give me the best chance of getting this done. And then all of a sudden it all comes together. That's what we're excited about. We're not excited about like taking the life of an animal. Like, it's not that we just take joy in killing things, but this is our purpose. And we love to hunt and we love to provide food. And then when you continue to progress as a hunter, and some people don't, some people couldn't care less. And it's crazy to me. They don't care about the antlers whatsoever. And I get it. That's totally fine. But if any of the listeners have a game processor close by, go by and ask if there are any people that drop off animals and don't want the head. Because my mom turned me onto this trick. And every year there are dozens of buck racks that are left because the people just don't care. They're like, I got the meat. Yeah. I got a buck. And I'm like, dude, these are perfect chew toys. They're good training toys. They're good to put in a bucket or like on a shelf as decoration. But yeah, all of those things, it's like, it's so much more than like, oh, I killed an animal. That's not what we're celebrating. We're celebrating the accomplishment and the work that got put into it. And obviously we're going to be honoring the animal, but in the moment, the emotions take over and there's nothing else you can do aside from whatever your body physiologically just makes you do in the moment.
Yeah. And I mean, I've been fortunate enough that I haven't really ran into too much of that because I don't put myself in a position to run into those type of people. And, you know, if, you know, I was to post on a public, I don't post too much on public forums just because I don't feel like letting, you know, the anti people out there just drain the energy from the situation, because like you said, they think you're bragging about murdering, and, you know, that couldn't, like you said, that's the farthest thing from the truth. That is like the emotion is, you know, exactly like you said, your hard work paying off. And the first thing I do when I get up to that animal, which I'm sure everybody does in their own way, you know, like, yes, I understand the animal is no longer living, but, you know, I'm thanking that animal, you know, for, you know, giving me and my family, you know, sustenance, because I, you know, like, I absolutely love hunting for everything about it. But ultimately, I want to fill my freezers because, you know, I put in the work and effort. I want to, you know, enjoy the spoils. And, yeah, you know, my wife takes, you know, game meat as a challenge. You know, when I shoot something different, she's like, all right, what can I do with this? So how can I make this better? You know, because like a lot of people are anti-game meat because they're like, oh, it's too this, it's too that. And it's like, well, work with it. Learn how to make it different, you know, because there's a lot of things you can do, you know, to wild game meat to make it taste not so wild, you know. So like, she's not necessarily all about going out and, you know, hunting with me, but she loves, you know, finding ways to cook it and enjoying it. Like, she's never been upset about anything I've brought home other than duck, when neither one of us are big fans of eating duck. My kids love it, but I'm just not a big duck person. I love hunting them. They're fun, and I've got to hunt them in some pretty crazy places, but I'm just not a huge fan of eating those things.
Have you tried the hanging method yet?
So, you know, it's funny because, you know, for the second time on your podcast the other day, I heard you talking about that. And I was actually just talking to some of my duck hunting buddies about that, asking if they had ever heard anything like that. And they're like, dude, if you hang it up, it's just going to go bad. And I'm like, you know, you would think that. But according to what, you know, this guy said on his podcast, this dude that he heard it from has been doing it since, you know, knee high to a grasshopper. So it's worth a shot, you know. Yeah. But my thing is like, number one, I live on a military base. I don't have anywhere I can hang those things up outside. And just like you, I'm pretty sure my wife would be very unhappy if I tried to hang up dead animals in the house until they start falling apart.
Yeah, you definitely have to find the right spot for it. Right now, I mean, luckily being here in Missouri, I have an amazing friend group. A lot of them have property. They've got shops. They've allowed me to store toys or canoes or whatever out at their places, because currently we're in an apartment hoping to move into a house. And yeah, I'm like, luckily I can still do that stuff, but I'm similar to you. You know, you're on a military base. I'm in an apartment. If I hung those from the balcony, I'm sure I would be getting talked to by management.
Yeah, like I used to process my own deer, and I mean, it's not that I can't anymore. It's just like I don't really have the space for it, right? So like I put an eye bolt in the ceiling in the garage, and I had my little pull up hanger, and keep the garage cracked just a little bit for the for some airflow. And I'd sit there and I would butcher my whole entire deer. I got all the stuff to do it and everything, but it's like, all it takes is that one neighbor to drive by and see you, boning out a dead animal in your garage for them to, call housing and throw a fit about it. So, I just went ahead and like, you know what, this is going to be somebody else's problem right now. I'll give you the, I get it butchered, the, minimalist, thing. I like to make my own like jerky and stuff. And, so I'll just have them do like the basic butchering, and then I'll get it back and I don't have to deal with the, the butchering of it. Like, I like doing that because then I know that it's my meat and, it's everything else, but I don't have the space for it right now.
I definitely enjoyed doing it when we used to do our own, and I probably will again once we have a house, but everywhere I've lived, it just doesn't lend itself to being the right thing. In fact, we lived in a KOA campground in a travel trailer for a while, and I ended up shooting a nice deer. I had a couple other buddies that shot deer, and I was like, hey, everybody just bring it here. And we set up a whole processing station right in front of our camper at a KOA campground. And for like 4 hours one night, we just sat there processing meat. And I'm like, somebody is gonna come. Nobody ever said anything. Nobody had a problem with it. So, I mean, it was also in the winter when most people aren't using KOAs, but that was our permanent home at the time. So,
I would say you might have a better chance getting away with it in a place like that, because other than your glampers, most people that camp are, a little bit closer to nature, that they're not going to throw a fit about that. You might be surprised somebody come over and ask to help, or try to get some meat from you.
I know. I was going to say, I'm like, man, if somebody comes over, I'd probably offer him a steak. Hey, we'll fire up the fireplace right now. We'll make a cowboy steak for you, and you can hang out and eat with us, and we'll tell you the stories of how these animals got shot. All right. If you're not using Tacticam's Reveal Cell cameras on your hunting property for scouting or monitoring the wildlife, you are seriously missing out. When you pair that with the Reveal mobile app, you can see the action as it's happening, no matter where you are. In fact, I've got trail cameras up in Wisconsin on the land that we hunt. And not only do I get pictures from those cameras sent to me, I can also track the progress of the camera, the battery life, how much memory is left on the SD card, and I can see what the weather's doing at the time that a picture is taken. So I can't think of a better tool for scouting, whether it is close to home or in a totally different state. So if you want to stay tuned into the action, or just get into the action, go to revealcellcam.com or tacticam.com and use code NOMADIC for 10% off at checkout. All right, guys, I've got to tell you about some of the new XOP products that I've been using this fall, and some of them I use in kind of an unconventional way. First off, I use the Mondo saddle, but I also use their turkey hunter vest, and I take the Cold World stand, put it in the back of the vest, and carry it in that way. Depending on how far I have to pack in, I'll just bring a foot platform, but one thing I've learned is that if I put the seat cushion on the underside of the seat and flip it up, it turns it into a knee pad also, or I can flip the seat down and sit on it like a conventional tree stand. I also used their holster kit clipped right onto my saddle to carry in my climbing sticks while keeping my hands free. If you're interested in getting a mobile hunting setup like mine, go to xopoutdoors.com and use code NOMADIC for 10% off at checkout.
Man, this is like there's no end to the amount of fun you have just trading stories. It's like I'm sitting here realizing, like, we've already been talking for, going on almost an hour, and I'm like, man, I prior to this, when I knew that, I was finally going to get to be on your show, I was like, man, I got all these stories I want to tell him, and I'm realizing, like, there's not enough time in an hour to do it. It's
Dude,
like, you're gonna have to have me on like five or six times just to hear my stupid stories. Not that anybody cares, but like I got a couple of good ones. Like one for, I told you about my 21 season was great. My 22 season was really interesting. I'll try to make this as fast as possible, but So where I'm at, stationed, there's an elk herd here on base, and you can put in for the draw to hunt elk here in Kansas.
Dang.
And they only put out, X amount of tags a year, because it's only, I want to say, don't quote me on this, and if anybody from this area is listening, I'm not giving too much away, but they only give out, I want to say maybe, 15 or 20 tags a year, because the herd's only, I think, like 300 or 400, so it's very, very well maintained. But it's a simple draw system just like anywhere else. And last time I was here, I didn't really know too much about it, and was a very inexperienced hunter. So this time I've definitely learned a lot more, mostly thanks to the guys I work with. Well, that, and believe it or not, listening to your show and everybody else giving their tips and tricks. But so found out about that, started putting in for the draw. I put in for the first year, no luck. Put it in for it in 22, I got drawn. And there's a couple
Nice.
different options where you can get like a any tag, so you can shoot a bull or a cow, or you can get just a cow tag. And I got drawn for a cow tag, and I was like, I'm not mad about it because I still got drawn. And
Yeah.
there's people that have been putting in for 15, 20 years and have never gotten in. I got it my second try.
Dang.
So I got the December firearm season, but the secondary to that is during the month of September, you can hunt them with either a black powder or a bow. And then if you don't, fill your tag, then you have to wait until your season again. So I was like, all right, I gotta, my buddy had a black powder, because we all in the office put in for it, and we all agreed if anybody gets drawn, it's going to be an everybody involved thing, because
Yeah.
it's there's the chances of all of us getting a tag are slim to none. So if one of us gets a tag, we all get a tag. And so, shockingly enough, the least experienced hunter in there was the one that got the tag. And so my buddy let me use his black powder rifle, and I went out once or twice with my bow, but the reality is this is like not necessarily a once in a lifetime tag, but it very well could be. So I wanted to better my chances. So he let me use his black powder rifle, and I hit the ground every day after work. I'd have my stuff with me, I'd hit the woods, and I would just start tracking. And I put, I don't know, 8 to 10 miles a day down, just walking around looking for them. And I had so many interactions with animals I couldn't kill, it started irritating me, because my very first morning out, I had two bulls at 40 yards.
Oh my
And
gosh.
so one of them just walks up out of nowhere, and he's kind of like a janky looking rack, but still he's at like 45 yards. And I'm like, I could shoot him with my bow, but I can't shoot him at all. So I'm just sitting there watching him. And then about 10 minutes later, from across the field, I see this thing walking at me, and throw my binos up, realize it's this beautiful 6x6 coming straight at me. And the closer he gets, like the bigger he gets. And the coolest thing that I remember about this bull is that he had a dark chocolate brown rack, except for each one of his points was snow white.
Yeah.
It was the craziest thing. I mean, obviously, I don't have a lot of experience with elk, but that was the coolest thing I'd ever seen. And honest to God, if I would have had a bull tag, that guy right then and there would have dropped, or at
Yeah.
least tried. But so I'm going around, I'm looking, and I'm finding bulls left and right. I had, I don't know, 15 different interactions with bulls. And then one day I'm walking down through like just this thick timber area, and all of a sudden, I get the smell. Like it is just rank and stank, and just you smell it. I know I'm in their bed.
Yep.
And all of a sudden, the woods just start blowing up. I look to my left, and there's a big bull elk running off. And then all of a sudden, in my face at like 7 yards, is this huge 6x5 just screaming at me. And I'm
Oh
like,
my gosh.
I'm freaking out, because it's the rut. And he can't really see me. He thinks I might be something he's trying to hook up with. And I'm like, oh my God, what do I do? Do I make myself known so that it scares him off? Or is that going to trigger him and I'm about to get, bulldozed?
You're gonna
And then
get
he just
sexually
sits there.
assaulted by a bull elk.
Oh yeah, I mean, I'm scared. I'm not gonna lie, I am literally scared at this point, because this bull is staring at me. you know, and he stopped bugling and I pull my camera out. And the only thing I'm mad about is I couldn't get his bugle on camera, but I pull it out. I'm taking videos of him. I'm taking pictures of him. Like, he's seriously like 7 to 10 yards away from me. And the only thing between us is a, you know, a little ragtag grass bush. And I'm like, I'm just going to stand there. And we have a standoff for like 10 minutes. The whole time he's just standing there staring at me. And I'm like, I have like 737 opportunities to shoot you and I can't do a damn thing about it. And finally, I don't know why, but he decided I don't want to be here no more. And he turns around and runs off. And I was like, that was probably the coolest thing I've ever experienced ever hunting. And so I start walking off and about five yards later, this big old mama cow comes out and, you know, she's got her two babies in front of her. And she stops at like 50 yards broadside. And I'm like, there it is. Pull the gun up, pull the hammer back, click. I was and I'm like, I'm freaking out because I'm like, it's a black powder rifle. I pulled the trigger and nothing's happening. And I'm like, I hold it in place for a second just to see, like, is it, you know, a hang fire or something? And it's not going off. And I'm like, crap. So I start moving towards the ground. And as I'm moving towards the ground, the gun goes off.
Oh my gosh. And
I was like, you've got to be kidding me. Like, I know I missed her, 100% missed her. You know, she stopped up on top of the hill. I pulled my binos out and I, you know, made sure, like, I definitely hit the dirt next to her, but I was like, you've got to be kidding me. You know, like, there was my opportunity and it was probably my fault. I probably, you know, didn't do a very good job cleaning, you know, the little eye hole of the, you know, the primer or whatever. But you know, I hunted like crazy through September. I had no luck at all. Finally December, I had to go to a school. So I missed half of December. I come back, I hunted a couple of days and then it was, you know, the holidays. So the day after Christmas, I go out and I'm like, you know, my buddy's got his camera out and he keeps seeing him walk right in front of his camera. And I'm like, dude, I hate to be that guy, but I have 4 more days to fill this tag. Yeah. Can you help me out? And he was like, he dropped me a pin. He was like, go here. They're going to be there. Well, I go out to this spot and I'm on the ground, right? I'm not in a tree and there's just nowhere to sit that gives me a really good view. So I'm like, whatever. I sit on the ground. I'm in a turkey chair, right? So I'm sitting on the ground in a turkey chair with a black powder rifle waiting for an elk to walk by. And I see a group of them up on the hill about 100 yards away. And I'm like, all right, cool. Here they come. And then the whole herd disappears. And I was like, well, shoot. And so I sit there, whatever. A couple, you know, maybe 30, 45 minutes goes by. And out of the corner of my eye, I catch movement. And I look over and 3 yards away from me is a cow elk standing broadside. Oh, how she snuck up on me is beyond me. But the fact that she had no idea I was there and I'm literally 3 yards away from her. I mean, a basketball goal is between us. That's it. And I'm sitting there not ready at all. And I'm like, how do I get this gun up and face her? Because she's to my side. So I couldn't like turn and actually, you know, shoulder the weapon properly. So I'm like, all right, we're about to go like, you know, straight drive by with this thing. And I had the black powder like turned to the side, aiming through the scope, not that I really needed to, and pull the trigger and boom. And then she just turns around and walks like 30 yards and just stands there. And I'm like, there is absolutely no way I missed that animal. There's no way. And then funny enough, you know, and I'm not trying to earn brownie points with you with as much as I keep mentioning your podcast, but one of the things that you said, not only on this podcast, but also on the Western Rookie, was when you're shooting big game, you keep shooting until they fall.
Yeah.
And she was just standing there. And I'm like, all right, you're going to give me the opportunity to reload a muzzle loader. We're doing this again. I reload again. I pull up on her 30 yards, put it right in her shoulder and dropped her. And I was just like, you've got to be kidding me.
That
just happened. So I call my buddy up and I'm like, hey, man, I just sent him a picture. And I was like, it's done. And he was like, all right, dude, I'm on my way. He drives out and he was like, where's that? And I was like, well, right in front of your camera, actually. And he was like, do you think you can drive out to it? And I was like, there's only one way to find out. So I drove my truck down through some pretty hairy situations, but I was able to drive right up to her. And then I was like, do we need to call somebody else? He's like, I don't know. She's pretty good size, but, you know, let's see if we can just throw her in the bed of the truck ourselves. And so, you know, I at least gutted her to empty, you know, a good 20, 30 pounds out of her. And then me and him just grabbed her and just yeeted her up in the back of the truck. And so, like, you know, there I got, you know, an elk. And so the way the draw works is if you get a cow, you can't draw again. You can't draw a cow again for 5 more years. But if you draw a bull and you kill a bull, that's your one and done forever. Like, you, it's a once in a lifetime tag here.
Dang.
So I, you know, I still get to put in for a cow, you know, for a bull for the next couple of years, but I can't kill a cow again. So, you know, and then, you know, archery season last year, I was, you know, able to take a nice little, you know, I knew it was a smaller deer, but I also found out that I had a really bad tear in my shoulder and I was going to end up having surgery. So I took the opportunity to go ahead and harvest an animal so I didn't eat tag soup again. So I got a little, you know, like 130 inch 11 point and just had that, you know, that one, you know, taken out and Euro mounted it. That was the little one that's in that picture. Dude, I don't know if you zoom in on that one, you can see that little bitty extra brow tine. That's what makes it the 11 point.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I got a freezer full of elk and deer now, and you know, today opened up turkey season, so I'm probably gonna go out and try to knock down a turkey. I'm not a super huge turkey hunter. Like, I got my first one a couple years ago, but it's kind of something to break up the non-hunting seasons between, you know, deer and duck and everything, kind of like you say.
Yep. Yeah, dude, I turkey hunting, man, I went out today, it was, I saw two hens on the property that I could hunt. They were both totally by themselves. I saw them like probably 2 hours apart. And every time I'm in the turkey woods and there's nothing going on, I question why I turkey hunt. Now, don't get me wrong, when there's birds, I get excited. You know, it's fun, but it's not like hunting deer. It's not like hunting ducks. It's not even like hunting crows, which I kind of fell in love with too late in the season this year. And for whatever reason, man, I honestly think it's because of how much people hype up turkey hunting that I'm kind of disappointed. It's like when people tell you, oh, you got to eat here, it's the best burger you've ever had, or the best ribs, or the best whatever. And then you go there and you're like, this isn't that great. And now I kind of just don't even want to eat here anymore. That's how I feel about turkey hunting.
You know, and it's funny because my very first bird, you know, the guy that used to be my boss, you know, he's a big turkey hunter. I mean, he's a huge deer hunter. Actually took one of the largest deer I've ever seen last year. He shot a 226 inch buck last year.
Holy cow.
But yeah, it's a monster. It's ridiculous. But he loves turkey hunting. Like, he travels, you know, to two or three different states every year just to turkey hunt. Like, he loves it, and he's good at it. So he wanted to get me out on my first bird, and we'd already been hunting several times. Funny quick story. I did not, because I'd never been a turkey hunter and I'm not the best duck hunter, but I really enjoy it. I didn't know there was a difference. And yes, you can make fun of me, but I didn't know there was a difference between a duck choke and a turkey choke.
Yeah.
So I still had my full choke from duck hunting on my gun, thinking that that was going to be good enough. And I missed several birds because the pattern wasn't tight enough to actually do any damage to them, you know, even at 35 yards. So they laughed at me for that. And then realized that I was using the wrong choke and, you know, had a good poke at that. Then gave me the right one. And then, you know, I went out, you know, one morning and didn't see nothing. I get back to work and it's like, you know, like 9:15, and he calls me and he's like, hey man, where you at? And I'm like, boss, I'm at work. It's 9:15. He's like, did you bring your stuff to go hunting? I was like, yeah. He's like, all right, cool. Lock up the office and come meet me out here because there's turkeys in the field right now. And I was like, okay, well, you're the boss.
That sounds like the best boss ever.
It absolutely is. So, you know, I go out there and, you know, the birds that he saw were, you know, a bunch of hens and there wasn't any toms around. So we went around doing some scouting, you know, parked the truck, started walking around. He hits the call and all of a sudden, you know, just right on the other side of this bend is, you know, you hear this big old gobble. And so he starts working this bird and this thing comes in and out, in and out. We never physically see it because of where we're sitting. And finally we see it, but it's over in a field like 200 yards away. And it keeps going to the top of the field and then coming back down to the bottom. And there's three or four hens with him. So obviously he's just working back and forth with them. But finally we like get down, we low crawl through the grass and the mud and everything, get up behind this little brush. and the thing starts coming down at us. And at the time, it didn't look like it was that far away. But he was like, all right, man, this is the best opportunity you're going to get. Are you on it? And I was like, absolutely. And he was like, okay, cool. Whenever you're ready, take it. And I shot and it flopped. And it just, you know, we immediately ran after it. He ran over there and stomped on its head because it was moving pretty good. And then as we were running, not only was it a super muddy field, so, you know, we're getting a mud bog run, but we realized, like, it's a pretty good clip. And we're like, he turns around and he's got his rangefinder with him. And he points at the brush that I was standing behind when I shot it and lasered it at 61 yards.
Jeez.
You know, and I was like, holy cow, is that normal? And he was like, I don't believe I've ever taken a shot at a turkey that far. And I was like, well, maybe I got lucky. Obviously I did, but I'm shooting a, you know, 870 Express Super Mag with a 30-inch barrel and a full turkey choke on it. So I can get out there a little bit.
You got a nice sight pattern.
Yeah. And then the next year I was out by myself and was able to take one. It was about 55 yards. So I've never shot a turkey close. You know, it's just like it, you know, kind of like you, like when you're just sitting out there, like I enjoy being in the woods and, you know, hearing all the noise and everything. But I don't get that same rush over turkey as I do for like deer or duck. And, you know, and it's weird because, you know, it's like duck, you know, you sit out there all morning long, freezing your butt off, breaking ice, you know, for six little birds that give you a, you know, a pound of meat. But yeah. I love doing it. It's a blast.
Dude, there's something about waterfowl that's totally different. I just, I don't daydream about turkey hunting. And honestly, the more I hunt out west, the less I daydream about a lot of the hunting here. And not to say like, dude, deer, I'm like sold on deer. I almost came back early from my elk hunt knowing I'd eat tag soup, which I ended up doing anyways, but I almost left early just to come back at a potential shot at a buck here in Missouri.
Yeah.
But like, there's something about big animals, and I'm not talking like giant antlers. Obviously there's something about that too, but like the mass of an animal, it just intrigues me so much to think that we are going out and able to harvest an elk that weighs 3 to 4 times as much as we do.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's so wild. And on those trips, you're going out of way. I mean, like I'm leaving home. I'm gone for 8 days, 10 days. Alaska this year, we're finishing dialing in plans for that. Knowing I'm gonna be in the middle of nowhere. And it's like the adventure portion of it is so exciting. Where, dude, I'm not gonna go and backpack in 10 miles, set up camp, bring all my gear with my wood stove and my wall tent to chase ducks. Although if somebody was like, hey, you should come do that, I would be all about it. But I think there's something greater with the adventure. Whereas turkey, it's like, okay, I can leave my house, get out there in 20 minutes, set up, see a bird, maybe not see a bird, and come home. And like my wife just got done dropping off the kids by the time I got home. And so I feel like there's a lot of things with turkey hunting that if it was a grand adventure, it might change. If I was good at turkey hunting, if I was a good caller, that might change. But there's so many things with it that I'm like, it's just turkeys.
It's funny that you said that because that's literally what I was thinking as you said it was like, you know, maybe it's just because I suck at it. You know, like I've tried calling, you know, like I got a buddy around here that, you know, owns his own business and he makes some amazing, amazing calls. He actually just recently got approved for a patent for his calls.
Sweet.
Awesome calls. And, you know, those guys can make those things just, I mean, they can make them do your damn dishes. But, you know, I hit anything and I sound, you know, like a dying animal as opposed to like a turkey. And I'm like, is this what they sound like? Am I doing this right? You know, I can't get anything to talk back to me. Usually when I call, I don't see stuff. So half the time I just sit there and wait. It's almost like deer hunting at that point. I just wait to see if something walks around me. And, you know, obviously I've gotten lucky a couple of times, but there's just, I don't know, something about turkey hunting that just, it doesn't really drive me the same way. And I don't know exactly why, but, you know, I'll do it, but I'm not going to like I'm not going to lose sleep over it. You know, I'm not going to put hours and hours of effort into it. But, you know, and I wouldn't turn anybody down if they were like, hey, man, come out and go turkey hunt. I'm like, sure, I'll go with you. But, you know, like, if I had something else to do that intrigued me more, I'm going to be like, yeah, I'm going to have to catch you next time. Like, you know, it's just,
yep.
You know, it's like duck hunting. At first, when I got into it, you know, I was here and all my buddies were duck hunters and they were like, dude, you got to try it, man. You're going to love it. You're going to love it. And I'm like, dude, what's the big deal about it? And they're like, you just have to do it. And once you do it, I promise you will like it. And I'm like, dude, I don't have anything. I don't have waders. I don't have a gun. I don't have anything. And they're like, don't worry. You can use my stuff.
Yep.
So I went out with them and, you know, yeah, it was amazing. I had so much fun, even though I fell in, like, it didn't even matter. Like my second time out, I got a great big, huge, full, you know, studded out wood drake. And, you know, everybody, like I shot this thing and it landed almost in my lap. And everybody looks at me and they just start, you know, like, oh man, F you, blah, blah. And I'm like, what did I do? I'm freaking out now because I'm thinking I did something wrong. And they're like, I've been hunting for 10 years and I've never killed a Drake Woody and all this other stuff. And I got a buffalo head and I got a big old canvas back. And I'm just like, dude, I'm shooting at what you guys tell me to. Like, be mad at yourself, you know? And then I moved down to, you know, El Paso when I was stationed down there. And, you know, yeah, it's West Texas, but there's not a whole lot of hunting opportunities out there unless you're ready to put in days and miles in the West Texas mountains. And, you know, I'm not about that life. I didn't know anything about it, but I was able to get into duck hunting a lot down there. And it was really fun because you got to hunt on the Rio, which was the border between Mexico and America.
That's,
you know,
cool.
So you literally go down to the border wall. The portion of it down there in El Paso, and you wait for the border patrol to open it so that you can drive down to the hunting grounds, and they have a spot, you know, where the hunting grounds start and then where they end. And it's a section of about, you know, 20 miles of the Rio. And there's, you know, certain places that are better than others and everybody knows them. So it's a, you know, it's a blast, to, you know, dash to get down there. People are doing 80 miles an hour on a gravel road just to get to that spot first. Because, like, by the time ducks get all the way down to South Texas, they've been shot at 7,000 times.
Yeah.
You know, they don't work decoys. They don't work calls. And, I mean, they might, if, you know, you're good at it. Again, I'm not the greatest caller in the world, and maybe I don't set up my decoys the right way. But, you know, I had a lot of success with duck hunting down there, and it was really fun. There's a couple times it got a little sketchy, you know, when you're down there hunting, and all of a sudden, you know, the border patrol on the other side of the water shows up, or some other people that don't look too friendly, and you make sure you gather your stuff up and get out of there. And the worst part was, is, you know, if you shoot a duck and it lands on the other side of the river, you don't get to go get it. So it's kind of frustrating at the same time, because, you know, like, I don't, it, like any real hunter, I don't enjoy not being able to recover an animal that I, you know, harvested.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you shoot this big, beautiful duck and then you just watch it fall, you know, on the Mexico side, and you're like, well, okay. Cause I mean, you can try, but the reality is if you get caught, it's a big, big deal, you know? So, like, you know,
yeah, I'll
birds
pass.
Down there were fun, but, you know, they're not worth the trouble that could come from them. So
no.
I was definitely happy to get back up here to Kansas. Duck numbers have been really, really low the last couple of years. So I haven't, you know, been able to do as good as I used to, but I imagine it's probably slow for most places. Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. Like anywhere else, like, you know, we didn't get a whole lot of rain last year, and then it took forever for a cold front to show up.
Yep.
You know, you wait until January when hunting season's almost over to finally have a good cold front to push everything down.
Man, that was definitely the story of this year. And I definitely have been hearing reports from people hunting all over that the birds just haven't been there. Aside from my cousin up in Wisconsin, he's like, dude, there's so many birds everywhere. I've seen more birds this year than anywhere else. And I'm like, of course you have. Thanks, man. Thanks for rubbing it in. I literally didn't kill a duck this year, aside from at training with my dog. And they're like, hey, we're going to shoot some live flyers today. And I'm like, oh, okay, cool. Like, those are the only ducks I killed all year long. But it's definitely exciting. Man, I feel like, yeah, like you said, it would take 5 to 10 podcasts just to dive into all the stories, but I know it's getting late. I know my wife is probably going, holy cow, he's been on the phone for almost 2 hours. And we've got family in town. So I can't be on forever, but I do want to thank you and say, great conversation, man. I had a ton of
Yeah,
fun hearing
man.
your stories, had a ton of fun having you on, and we're really not that far apart. So we might have to get a
I'm
hunted
literally going
again.
to be in your backyard next week. If you want to switch numbers or something after this, maybe we can meet up at Bass Pro Shop. I got a couple gift cards I need to burn anyways.
Hey, that sounds awesome. That'd be a ton of fun. And if you want to pay insane out of state turkey prices, I could maybe even get you on a bird.
Yeah, I don't know about that, but I'm definitely down for a possible meetup. If we can work that out, I'm not gonna take away from your family, but no, I absolutely appreciate you having me on, man. This has been a blast. Honestly, something I've looked forward to for a long time. So really glad that I got to do this. Hopefully, I didn't bore your listeners too much.
Dude, you didn't bore me. I know that, which means I know you didn't bore them. So I appreciate it. Before we hop off, where can people find you? Where can they follow along and see some of the pictures?
I've got, Facebook and, Instagram, whatever. I'm not super huge into posting on social media, mostly because I'm too busy enjoying the situation to take pictures of it. But I do have some good pictures on Instagram. You can find me at BowHunter2769. I got my pictures of my bucks and my ducks on there and stuff. So you can see it there. But that's the most stuff that I post.
Nice. Well, dude, I appreciate it. Thanks again. I will definitely be shooting you a text after this, and we'll stay connected, and hopefully we can do a meetup next week at Bass Pro. That sounds awesome.
Absolutely, bro. Appreciate you, man.